The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield, your number one news and talk station.
The Money Show brought to you by Old Mutual, a licensed financial services provider. Today's the day. Get great financial advice. Do great things. Welcome to The Money Show. And we've got such a great show lined up for you tonight. Plus, your Friday night reward of testing your brain to see how much you've absorbed with the brutal biz quiz. The winner will take away 2,000 Rand in cash. That comes up in about 40 minutes from now. Before then, we'll talk to the governor of the Reserve Bank, Lesetša Kganyogo. He is in Washington, D.C. this weekend, meeting the IMF, meeting the World Bank, meeting with the ratings agencies, along with the finance minister, Malusi Gigaba. We'll talk to the director general in the National Treasury tonight as well, here on The Money Show. We don't have a fast fact question for you this evening because we do the full-blown brutal biz quiz, but he has a fast fact-ish question. And I want to know from you, how long it has been since Thuli Madonsela published her State of Capture report. Remember the State of Capture report, this document that really turned the tables on state capture. Now, you can send me an answer if you like, but I'm about to give it to you, so it's kind of self-defeating. It's a year. Can you believe it's 12 months ago that Thuli Madonsela published that report? Tomorrow is the first anniversary. So much has happened in South Africa over the last 12 months. How much has changed and how much has stayed the same? Today marks that one-year anniversary of the State of Capture report, which gave rise to the Sachsenwald Shebeen and other frivolities as well. Business Leadership South Africa issuing a statement today saying a year has passed and too little has changed. In fact, further evidence of state capture released in the public domain, including via the so-called Gupta emails, proves the situation to be even worse than we first thought. State capture remains rife within our society, and South Africa continues to suffer the consequences from this crisis of confidence in the legitimacy of government. Business is not blameless, and where incidents have occurred, we've spoken out against it. But whereas in business there is a culture of accountability, this cannot be said for government, where the organs of accountability have also been captured. The incidents of state capture in business have been isolated, but in government they are endemic. And just over a year ago, feels so much longer. It really does feel so much longer. And then today, to add fuel to this particular fire, the Supreme Court handing down judgment in the eight-year-long spy tape saga, ruling against President Jacob Zuma and the National Prosecuting Authority. The bottom line is, it could mean the president finally getting his day in court, although he has over many years, despite saying how much he'd like to clear his name in court, used your money, every legal avenue at taxpayers' expense, to avoid it. So the judgment is massively positive, but it may be a little ambitious to expect a court date any time soon. The Friday File brought to you by DigiCape, the go-to authorized Apple reseller and your local Apple expert. Start the conversation at digicape.co.za. Now, you know Chris Becker is the chief executive of Naspers, now the chairman of Naspers, the guy who brought pay TV to South Africa. He was also instrumental in the early days of cellular telecommunications in this country. You probably don't know much about what he likes to do in his spare time. I'm quite surprised, Chris Becker, that you do have any spare time, quite frankly. But it turns out this Sunday, being billed as Garden Day, it's the horticulturalist's answer, I suppose, to Braai Day. But what's the overarching plan of Sunday being declared Garden Day?
Well, it's nice to talk to you. You know, gardening in the business community has a somewhat dubious connection. If you put someone on gardening leave, it usually is a substitute for firing. I think Harvey Weinstein is now on gardening leave, is he?
I suspect so, but gardening in a rockery more than in a plush, lovely garden, I'm sure, yeah.
Indeed. But the idea is simply to get people to live a bit more healthily. You know, I grew up on a farm. And then I went off to live in New York and Amsterdam and such metropolitan outfits. And I got terribly thin, so we always went bankrupt several times. And in Amsterdam, my wife and I got a piece of land, a hectare about. We started gardening. And you get your fingers into the soil, and you pick up bacteria, which boosts your immune system, and you get some vitamin D from the sun, and your blood pressure drops, and you start grounding yourself. And at the end of the day, you feel so much better. So over here in South Africa, when we returned, we bought a place in Franschhoek where we gardened. And I just enjoy discovered what a joy it is. And then our gardener said, why not encourage other people to do the same? So we thought, let's organize a day. And the whole purpose is not to get people to do anything or buy anything. It's simply to sit in the garden, kick up their feet, invite the friends and the family and the children in and enjoy it. Just absorb it.
I mean, gardens in South Africa are seen as pretty elitist. I think the Water Affairs Minister has been very critical, saying we're a water-scarce country and we waste far too much money pouring it onto gardens when there's drought all around us. The Western Cape, where you're based, is in the midst of a drought. Do we need to be sensitive to that sort of thing, or is there a bigger picture at play here?
Bruce, I think there's no statistical correlation between wealth and gardening at all. So you'll turn up at the friend's 20 million rand pad in Clifton.
I don't have those kind of friends, but I take your point.
I'm sure your listeners include many of those. And you won't see a green thing about it, right? And then you drive to the Cape Town airport and you see these zinc huts. And just count, every third or fourth one has a vegetable garden. And that's on Sunday, for example, where we'll be hanging about. There's no correlation with wealth. It's actually something psychographic, that some people love plants and they love producing vegetables and love to fiddle around. And, you know, some people just don't have that need. And I have a better excuse even. I read that the great physicist Isaac Newton said that when he's puzzled, when he can't solve a problem, he becomes like a hare looking at a cobra, you know, hypnotized. And then he looks away from the problem, just 15 degrees, looks at some other issue. And suddenly, in his peripheral vision, a solution to the problem starts forming. And then he knows exactly what to do. I find that with gardening. So when I have a really tough problem, I sort of get depressed. And then I go out and I prune a tree. And because my hands are busy, my mind is now free to roam. And I keep the problem in mind, but I don't think about it. I try to keep it off center. And then suddenly you see in peripheral vision, as it were, here's the solution. Mm. So I find it immensely productive. You know, it's for me much better than golf or any other expensive hobby.
And that uses more water. That uses more water. So you do get your hands dirty. I mean, you do get stuck in.
I absolutely love it. And I think if you look at where we as a species come from, let's say we might be 5 million years or so old. Almost all that time we spent in nature. Cities started forming 8,000 to 6,000 years ago. So the metropolitan lifestyle is completely unnatural for humans. And I think that's part of the reason why we feel so good when we've been out there for a while. You know, you basically return to the state that your body was shaped for and that your ancestors for millennia regarded as the daily life. At least I feel better.
But you've taken it to an unprecedented scale. I mean, you and your wife bought Bobby Launstuaren in the Winelands, and my understanding is when you got it, it was pretty run down, and you did some digging about, and you found shards of pottery that had probably been buried there for the last 300 years, and you've displayed those in cases as a tribute, I think, to the past. And you've recreated, as best you can, from the original plans of Jan van Riebeck's food garden, the VOC's food garden in the City Bowl of Cape Town, you've tried to recreate that pattern at Bobby Launstuaren. Tell me about what the motivation was there.
Look, have you ever seen it? Have you been there?
I have, yes.
Good.
I paid the 10 rand at the gate and I got in.
Yes, there's no commercial rationale at all. You know what they say about the economics of farming, that if you want to lose money, gambling is the quickest. Women, probably the most pleasant. But farming, of all methods, is certainly the surest.
I understand number three, yes.
There is no commercial underpinning. It is simply pleasure. But on the other hand, you know, if you work every day like we do, taking enormous risks, I mean, 50% of our ventures fail. I mean, by failing, I mean we write off everything, we fire everyone, we close down the shop. So the attrition rate is enormously high. It's a brutal life. I think then you could set aside part of your life and say, okay, this is not commercial. Okay, even if this loses money, who cares? Fine. And I think it sort of serves as a counterbalance. And for me, there's something else in it, sort of slightly philosophical. If you look at the way people draw the Bible, the heaven, the, or Eden, you know, the original paradise in their children's Bible in each culture, and you look at their gardens, you see they correspond totally. So take an English children's Bible, you'll see what does Eden look like? There's a rolling hill, there's a copse, little stream, two sheep, right? And it is exactly the capability gardens, capability brown gardens of 1780. It's exactly that.
Yeah, okay, gotcha. So,
and you ask why an Arabic garden in the Islamic world, four walls around it, four watercourses dissecting it and so on. So heaven corresponds to garden. And I think the reason it does so is simply that when you build a garden, you build a little heaven, you say, this is an idealized world. It's not the real world. It's the world as it ought to be if I could have been God, you know, if I could have reconstructed it. But I think that's why garden is so therapeutic, is you take a piece of land, it looks like a dog's backside, and you start shaping it into your vision of what heaven should be. And then you go sit there on a Saturday afternoon, you feel good. And that's, in a sense, what we encourage people to do Sundays, just to say, okay, don't work. You've worked all year. Get out there, take your friends in, invite the neighbors over, and just enjoy it. And you know, so many people are nosy about what the neighbors
are doing. Oh, yes, absolutely. I understand.
You see this beautiful Madame Alfred Carrier rose coming over the backyard, you know? But you don't have the confidence to go ask them to see it. But they feel the same about you. So we're thinking on Sunday, invite them to pop over for a cup of tea and then go stick your nose into their garden and enjoy. I mean, they're very proud of what they've done. Sure. Give them a chance to show off a little.
So, I mean, is it true that you've got a cutting from a tree from the Garden of Gethsemane at Babylonstorten?
Yes, it's an old olive.
An old olive. And has it taken? Is it growing?
It's about 3 meters high. And we have the mulberry. In Shakespeare's backyard, there was a mulberry.
Yes.
In Stratford-on-Avon. And then it was such a popular visitor attraction that lots of people came to visit it, and the then owner of the house after Shakespeare got so irritated he cut the tree down to stop the visitors. But luckily, by that time, several cuttings had been taken. So we have a child of that. We have a child of the willows at Napoleon's grave on St. Helena.
Yeah.
Before he was reburied in Paris.
Yeah.
Newton's apple tree, which is called the flower of Kent. So
that is still alive. I mean, the original tree in the garden, isn't that still alive, or has it just fallen over or something?
No, what happened was the original trees, because the significance was realized so quickly, people knew this tree has historical significance, many cuttings were taken, and we got a child of one of the cuttings. But now the interesting thing about the cutting is not a child in the sense of humans where you have 50% of the DNA of your father. This one has 100% of the DNA because it's not
true.
It's not a crossbreed. It's actually a piece, a clone of the original. So you might say small things amuse small minds, but it's, for me, quite amusing to have the real item that connects to different historical figures and makes history a little bit more alive.
Chris Becker, Living It. Thank you very much for joining us, the chairman of Naspers. I was going to talk to him about Naspers, but I quite like talking about gardens, frankly. We'll talk about Naspers another time. Chris Becker on the line to us from Cape Town. They're calling it Garden Day, and it's sort of being motivated by being curious about your neighbors, being curious about somebody down the road, inviting somebody down the road into your garden and sharing that space. It's a nice idea. It's a bit like Braai Day without the smoke, frankly.
The Money Show.
The Markets.
Now, here is something that has never been said about you, Byron Lotter, from Vestact. And that is Kim's SMS in response to the Chris Becker chat. Isn't he the most interesting man? I'd love him as a guest at my dinner table.
Thanks, Bruce.
Kim's never said that about you. No. Hey, Kim's never said that about you.
Well, I didn't make the best investment of all time, so.
And was he lucky? Come on, well, he was lucky. And, well, and we're lucky because he made lots of money out of 10 cent, and for $10, we can go to Babylonstor and then see cuttings of some of the greatest trees ever planted.
Yes, and I have been there before. I actually went there in March, and it was lovely. But on the investment side of things, you know, I've been reading quite a few books recently that suggest, you know, there's a big combination of skill, hard work and luck is a big factor. But
luck, you can't underestimate. And Chris Beck has admitted it many times in the past, to say that they made many investments. And when they first went into China, they took people that they knew. They took managers from Naspers and they imposed them on Chinese businesses that they bought. And many of those things cost them millions and millions of rand. And they got themselves into a very, very tight squeeze until they changed strategy and bought stakes in Chinese businesses run by Chinese people and left the Chinese people to run their businesses, including a little one, the minimal, tiny little thing called Tencent. And now it's worth 1.8 trillion rand in the investment portfolio of Naspers.
Yeah, I actually saw a report a few days ago that suggested that Tencent has returned 69% per annum for the last 17 years since Naspers bought that stake.
Compounded.
Yeah.
I mean, if you can get an investment return of in South Africa of 10% per year compounded, you're doing brilliantly. It means your money doubles every 5 years or six years or whatever it is.
Mm.
And if you can get 69% compounded over 17 years, well, thank you very much for playing.
Yeah, you've done pretty well. The new acronym now is BAT, apparently, because it's Baidu, Alibaba, and Tencent. So that's like the FANG stocks of China. Which is interesting the way the Chinese have done it. You know, they've got 1.3 billion people to leverage off. So they sort of regulated all the big US tech companies out of China and said, okay, let our own guys do it. We've got enough people for them to build up that kind of scale. And I mean, it wasn't easy for the likes of Jack Ma from Alibaba and, you know, these guys that went and built these businesses. But, you know, they didn't have to face the outside competition.
Okay, so here's the most unfair question of all, and I'm holding you to this, and I'm going to measure you in 16 years' time. What's South Africa's next Tencent?
It's a tough call. I think the most dynamic business that we have at the moment is Discovery, to be honest. When you look at the companies you have at your disposal to invest in, if you do have access to the likes of UK and US stock exchange, I feel Discovery offers something extremely unique, and mostly with Vitality. Their ability to align their customers with themselves as an insurer is quite incredible, and their ability to white label that Vitality intellectual property and sell it onto massive insurers all over the globe, I think has huge potential, because it really does make sense. You know, everyone getting fitter, healthier, driving better. What insurer doesn't want you know, people to do that for in exchange for a few smoothies? Yeah,
exactly. But behaving better, so not claiming, and so you get to keep all the premiums, and you don't have to make any payments. It's very clever. Quickly, Stadio. This is the 2-week-old listing, which comes out of Curo, and Curo comes out of PSG. And we should know the story of that one by now. But Stadio making its big first acquisition, Mill Park Business School, and the business that surrounds that.
Yeah, geez, off the bat, very fast. You know, we knew that as the separate listing was coming, immediately the rights issue announced, and then now immediately the first acquisition. Mill Park for 320 million rand, apparently the leaders in local MBAs. And this is exactly what they said they're going to do. You know, they wanted to get into the tertiary sector, the private tertiary sector. I'm pretty sure they'll leverage off that branding and expand the offerings. But I agree with their team and the Advertech team that private tertiary education has a massive room to grow within South Africa.
It most certainly does. Fees must fall and all of that. Lots of people will be looking for alternatives. Record day for the JSE again. We had a bit of a down day yesterday, down about 30 points. But we've resumed our winning track. And the Rand better, 3.5% better today than it was on Monday. It kind of feels like everything hinged on Wednesday when Janet Yellen intimated, and she never says anything, but she intimates, that there wouldn't be a rate hike in the United States come December. And as a result, everyone's a bit more chilled than about emerging markets.
Yeah, I think it's still pretty 50-50 about that December call, so we'll have to see. And like you say, I mean, the movements there are actually coming from the dollar. Although when we did see the Supreme Court of Appeal decision this morning, the Rand did actually strengthen. So it's very nice to see a stronger market with a stronger Rand, because usually it's the other way around. But again, I mean, it sounds a bit... like we're talking about one stock here the whole time. But I mean, this massive surge in NASPERS has certainly been a massive influence over why our stock market is at an all-time high, because the economy is still in a tough position.
Absolutely right. Byron Lotter, Portfolio Manager at Vestec, thanks for coming in. Nice to have you on The Money Show this Friday evening. We're expecting to connect to the DG and the National Treasury, Dundo Mohojane, and also to the Reserve Bank Governor, Lesetse Kganyago, in the next few minutes here on The Money Show. They're in Washington, D.C., making a case for South Africa, an increasingly tough case to make, as we will stare over the brink into fiscal uncertainty. The Money Show brought to you by Old Mutual, a licensed financial services provider. Today's the day. Get great financial advice. Do great things. Coming up on the next Money Show, I'm talking to one of the best communicators on the political economy in South Africa. Claire Bissaker has written a book called On the Brink, South Africa's Political and Fiscal Cliffhanger. Also, for Make Money Mondays, we'll bring you Hassan Adams, Executive Chairman of Grand Parade Investments, and the guy behind Burger King in South Africa. He's got some quaint ideas about money. I can't wait to tap his brain next time on The Money Show. Well, two of the most important people in the country in terms of our finances, the DG and the National Treasury, and the Governor of the Reserve Bank, both standing by for us in Washington, D.C. this evening. Both at the IMF meetings in Washington in a week where the International Monetary Fund upgraded growth expectations for much of the rest of the world, but further downgraded their expectations for our growth to less than half a percentage point. Dondo Mohajane joins us. He is Director General of Finance in the National Treasury. What is on the agenda this weekend, DG?
Hi, good evening, Bruce. Good evening to your listeners. Bruce, there are a number of issues on the agenda, but what's critical is fulfilling our statutory requirement for us to be at these meetings, because as you know, we own the World Bank. We own part of the World Bank in South Africa. We own part of the IMF. So there are your statutory meetings, your development committee meetings, International Monetary Finance Committee meetings, and also at the margins of these meetings, you have your G20 meetings. G20 meetings, and there are key issues that are being discussed here around issues affecting the global economy, and then we've been participating in that. There's a key discussion that has been taking place in G20 setup on the compact with Africa under the German presidency, how developing countries that own 85% of the world would want to obviously assist Africa in creating its own development paths and ensuring that private sector is developed in Africa. Fourthly, and critically, is around issues of international tax. Your whole issue about e-taxation is being discussed in G20. And also finally on cybersecurity, because critically now, the cyber information security is quite critical, and G20 discussions are taking place around those. So in the G20 setup, these are four big issues. But the key issue in the World Bank IMF is how then do you take recognize that there's recovery in global growth. How do we then ensure that we actually take advantage of the recovery that's there, and I mean, also taking advantage of the fact that we have to strengthen our cooperation, multilateral cooperation?
Sure. I mean, DJ, all of that is terribly important. That's the long term. That's the 5-day test. In the short term, we're playing a 2020 game as well as South Africa. We have got growth stalling to virtually zero. We've got an economy practically on its knees, and we've got ratings agencies who you'll be seeing this weekend too, if you have not seen them already, who are really concerned about political stability, who are really concerned about the lack of growth, who are really concerned about prospects for our economy into the future. What feedback are you getting from them now?
Bruce, we met with S&P already. We met with Moody's this morning. And as you can imagine, all of them would ask questions around our growth story, and will ask questions around what we see as green shoots that we already see in our economy. How are we going to sustain that forward? What challenges are you facing from a fiscal point of view? We explained ourselves as usual, the details of some of which we told them, and they are aware, by the way, will come on the 25th of October And we, on the same day, we'll have an extensive teleconference with them explaining what we will be presenting that morning. So, yes, they are concerned, as they were in the last report, around political asset uncertainty, what the ANC policy conference is going to bring about in December, etc. So all I think we are explaining is issues that you are working with, issues that we see are a concern to us. We had 14 confidence-boosting measures that we articulated in July. We're explaining to them how far we are in meeting some of the targets that are there. We explain to them the issues around facing state-owned companies, because that's also an issue for them. As you know, the guarantee amounts that are in there, we're able to explain to them.
Okay.
But also, I think for us, Bruce, what is important is we are here also to learn. You know, at the annual meetings of the IMF World Bank give you an opportunity. There are many seminars here. There are many experts all in one space in a week. So we make sure that our diaries are packed. We meet with them. We ask them questions. We seek advice. And also, we at the same time, we sell the South African story. We meet investors. There's an investor breakfast that's been arranged with various investors in the U.S. J.P. Morgan also arranged a session with various investors, all wanting to hear us out and wanting to actually explain face-to-face what we are faced with. Yes.
Sorry, Dondo Mokgajane, we have to leave it there, but Director General of Finance and the National Treasury. Otherwise, we'll have no time for the Governor of the Reserve Bank, Lesetša Ganyago, who's also in the room, going to all of these meetings, going to attend all of these things. And you've been, Governor Ganyago, to many of these gatherings. Are you finding a receptive crowd, or are you finding that the people that you're talking to, that you've seen many, many times before, less keen to give South Africa the benefit of the doubt than perhaps they did 12 months ago?
Well, you say that are they giving us the benefit of the doubt? No, they are engaging with us. They are raising issues of concern that they would have, and they raise them robustly. So there are two things, as the DG had said. The first one set of issues have to do with the official meetings, statutory responsibilities, and so forth. And I think that a theme that has been running throughout these meetings had been that, without a doubt, we have got a global economic recovery. That global economic recovery is broad-based, both in advanced economies and in emerging market economies. It's geographically well spread, and you could safely say that the global economy is now in a recovery mode. Question that comes is, how do small open economies engage with that recovery, and how do they take advantage of that economic recovery? That's one set of issues. Second set of issues has to do with the fact that we have got to make growth more inclusive, and that is a very important element. No one talks about economic growth here unless they talk about inclusivity of growth. And lastly, is that there is an acknowledgement that globalization has taken millions and millions of people out of poverty. But the benefits of globalization have also been skewed, that even in the advanced economy, there are people who feel marginalized from globalization. And the question was, how do you get more inclusive globalization? And for countries, getting more inclusive globalization necessarily entails having fair international trade rules so that everyone can access each other.
Again, that's the five-day test picture. In the 2020 game that South Africa is engaged in right now, as I mentioned to the DG, the key concerns, and I mean, they must be asking you about your independence as the Reserve Bank, the threats to the Reserve Bank, the public protector's assault on the Reserve Bank. You're going to court to protect the integrity and the independence of the Reserve Bank. Are they convinced that you are going to be able to stay the course on this?
Well, we are on the course. On the contrary, Bruce, it is a five-day test. It is not a 2020 game. Because you see, when you are talking about the issues of growth and inclusive growth, you've got to necessarily take into account the fact that you need structural reform to raise the potential growth rate of the economy. And if you have to embark on a structural reform program, it is a long-term issue. Well, even in a five-day test, you must worry about every over that comes through. So the issues that you are raising then are the stuff that takes place in the overs, in the build-up to the finality of the test. And yes, they raise the issue about concerns about the independence of the Reserve Bank, and they correctly raise it because, you see, Bruce, South Africa prides itself with very strong institutions of our democracy. And it is these institutions that every year we have been telling these international participants, we have got strong institutions. So any inkling that would suggest that any of those institutions is under attack, investors will correctly raise the question. But it is not just investors. I have colleagues in central banks, in ministries of finance, who say, what is going on? Why is the Reserve Bank under attack? We actually think that you are one of the better-run institutions. And I have to say to them that in a democracy, there will be a contestation about institutions and the role of institutions. In this country where we are now, there had been contestation about the role of the Fed. In the UK, there had been contestation about the role of the Bank of England. You get these things in society, in all societies. The problem in South African society with this discourse is that we are engaged in populist rhetoric, shouting at each other rather than being engaged in robust, rational policy discussions. And that is the problem that we face. So the message from that I keep on communicating here with all of the investors and my colleagues and counterparts is that there are checks and balances in our institutional configuration. And I keep on saying to them, the independence of the Reserve Bank is not just in the Constitution. The independence of the Reserve Bank was in the original constitutional principles. So even if somebody musters a two-thirds majority and changes our mandate, it must be tested against the original constitutional principles. And you can rest assured that the Reserve Bank will not take this one lying down. If there's to be a change in the mandate of the Reserve Bank, we will use the institutions of our democracy to protect the other institutions of our democracy, of which the Reserve Bank is one.
Lesetja Ganyaho, I thank you so much for joining us this evening. Governor at the Reserve Bank.
The Money Show.
The Biz Quiz.
Time for the Biz Quiz with MTN. 2,000 Rand up for grabs. Damon, which insurance company this week launched an investment business? Damon?
Yes, hi.
Which company this week launched an investment business? Outsurance, absolutely right. Well done to you. Outvest launched this week. Which insurance company chief executive resigned this week? You don't know. Oh, Damon, that's a great pity. Akil, which insurance company chief executive resigned this week? Now, if you're slow, you get gonged out. Bichal.
It's Outsurance.
Outsurance. Sorry, but was that Outsurance twice in a row?
Yes.
Oh, there we go. Solly Kramer is chief executive of which business?
Norman Goodfellas.
I thought you were going to say Outsurance. You're the wizard of the Biz Quiz, Bichal. Oh, he didn't fall for the trick. Well done, Bichal. Congratulations to you. Wizard of the Biz Quiz, 2,000 Rand. Coming your way, courtesy of those nice people at MTN Business.